So first of all, let's start at the beginning. Next week we have the opportunity from Rav Zev Wolbe in this slot, and I thank the Shine since this already sponsoring, so I know that our numbers will be higher. And then in 2 weeks' time, we have Rav Ari Leibowitz, always brings out a nice crowd, and he's phenomenal. So put it on your schedules. I know you all be tired, but you all want to get the chance to be here. Tonight, I'm going to talk about tshuva. Right? How? So I would like to do tshuva by asking some questions and seeing what the tshuvot are. Question number one, I was not the greatest person in the world. If you had met me 5 years ago, I was running with a bad group of people and was pretty much rudderless. Since then, I've decided to get my life in order, and I've really done tshuva for the last 5 years. The local business has called me to testify against my friend for some things we did together. Can I go? Must I go? After all, I'm kind of partial atheist. So it's like, can I take the fifth? Right? Well, you know, that will be question number one. Option one. Option two. Somebody borrowed a shul-owned machzor that was brand new. In the course of the davening on Yom Kippur, the person poured her heart out, and out flew many, many tears. Those tears stained the pages, and now the machzor is not in the tip-top condition that it was loaned. The Gabbai Svarim of the shul has asked the woman to replace the machzor, and that she now diminished its value. Must she? Question number two. Question number three is, on the surface, a throwaway, but not really so. Can I do tshuva on behalf of another person? That person can't do tshuva, won't do tshuva, whatever the case is, can I do tshuva on their behalf? Now, sometimes we have shlichus in other mitzvahs, so is there shlichus for tshuva or not? Those are your three choices. Shlichus for tshuva, the stained machzor, or the baal tshuva. You want to start with three? Okay. To me, this is the million-dollar question. So what do you guys think? Thoughts? Yes? No? Why not?
Is it something that you need to feel? You have to regret it and confess to it.
So because you have to regret it and confess to it, so that seems to put it in one direction. So I'm sitting in front of a Baal Tefillah on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. Right, and this Baal Tefillah, who's sitting in front of me, you just basically knocked out his job. Because I don't know where I come from, we talk about a shliach tzibur, and isn't it his job to take care of stuff? I mean, don't we look at the actions of the kohen who brings the karban chatas, or the kohen gadol on Yom Kippur? What do we say? V'chiper? V'ado bad beso bad kol kal Yisrael. Isn't he's there to represent us, right? Very good. So the fact of the matter is that the Rambam agree, and Dina both say the same thing, right? And they agree with each other. So don't make a mistake about this. The Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva, Perek Aleph, Halacha Beis, right off the bat. So that's exactly what Dina says. There's a difference between Kapara and Tshuva. He says, Sir Mishtalech, Lefishu Kapara, Kol Yisrael, Kohen Gadol, Mizvada Olav. Right? Remember, the Rambam is of the opinion that there is a mitzvah called Vidui, right? And that is the mitzvah of Tshuva. He says, yes, it's true that when you have the sa'ir, the goat that goes off the cliff, yes, it's a kapara for all B'nai Yisrael, and yes, it's true the Kohen Gadol says the vidui, and he says it aloshon kol Yisrael on behalf of all the Jewish people. That's his language. Chat anashem chatu avu pashu, right? Shenemar v'shvad alavetz kol avonos B'nai Yisrael, and we say therefore sa'ir mishalech machaper kol beirosh Shabbat Torah kalos v'achamuros bein shavar b'zadon bein shavar b'shkaga bein shahoda bein shelo hodalo. There are all sorts of things that get included. But says Dina, Vahusha Asa Tshuva. If you want the carbon to work, you have to do tshuva. Avamo Asa Tshuva in Asar Mechaper. So Dina says, and the Rambam says, no offense, you can use all the systems and walk through all the systems, but if you don't do tshuva, it don't work. Right? So then if that's the case, if that is the case, what is tshuva? To the Rambam again, moves in. Perek beis halacha beis umayi tshuva. So what is that? Hushiyazo v'achote cheto v'yasiro mimachshavto v'igmor b'libo shelo yaseiwo. Right? It's the three-step process that Dina pointed out. A person has to forget about the sin, and he has to get rid of the machshava from his head, and he has to decide that he's not going to do it. Shenemar yazo v'rasha darko. Right? And he has to be able to turn around and be Menachem, Misnachem, I feel bad that I did this in the past. Shenemar ki acharei shuvi nichamti, And then the Yair Alav Yodei Atal Moshelo Yashuv L'Zachit Li'Olam. Then God can testify about him. Okay, he's really done. He's not going back to the sin. Shenemar V'lo Nemar Od Elokeinu V'Masi Adenu. V'Tzarich L'Tzvados B'Svasav. He has to say Vidui. V'Lo Mar In Yanos Elu Shegamar B'Libo. And then he has to be able to explain the things that the process that he or she went through in the heart. So, like, the bottom line is tshuva involves a process. It's a clarifying process. Yes, you have to say vidui, but the vidui comes, you know, from all the processes inside. By the way, the Rambam continues in Halacha Gimel of the second parak. Kol ha-misvada b'dvarim, if you just say the words v'lo gamar b'libo la'azov, right, and you don't have in mind that you're going to leave the process, hareze dome l'tovo v'sheretz biyado. It's like going to the mikvah, holding on to something tummy. Like, what'd you do? Right? You can keep going to the mikvah up and down, but if you're still holding on to the bug, you're not getting rid of the bug. You have to first, you know, agree and then leave the sin, and then you can get the rachmanos. We'll talk about that maybe Shabbos Shuvah a little bit, but the fact is that the process of tshuva is something that each individual has to have in mind. Otherwise, the kapara steps can be from here to tomorrow. They're not going to be worth anything. So the main act of tshuva may be the process of reciting vidui, but vidui is not enough. So says the Rambam, so says Dina. Right? Now what if a person can't recite vidui? In such a situation, can it be recited on his behalf?
So if they're appointing someone to be the shliach,
right?
Or passively not saying I'm anti tshuva, right? Is it not? I mean, like Yom Kippur, right? Yom Kippur means a lot of things to people aren't Shom Shabbos. They're all showing up to Yisgar. They're all
right.
They don't know what they're doing necessarily. They're there for 10 minutes. They say their altar's name and they go out.
Right.
So aren't, I mean, you would think, I mean, like, you always want to say, like, why don't you stick around? It's going to be a next stop. You know, well, what's the...
Let me go one step further. Let's say the person does stick around. But you know what? The Al-Khaits and the Al-Shamnus and all that other stuff, like, it's kind of hard to do.
So
who's
the
Shayna Udelish? Or Shayna Udeya Lispalo. So isn't that the whole point of making a Shliach Tzibur? Yeah, by the way, Dina, what do you say to that? Your husband's question is a good one, right? So, like, what's up with that? So I'll tell you what Dina will tell you. She'll say to you, look, it's a very nice idea that you're trying to put the two together, but one is an outward expression of the other, right? In other words, the recitation of vidui is just an outward, it's a mechanical process for what's going on the inside. And so what I say, says Dina, is if you just can't engage the mechanical process, so then, but you can do all the precepts, you're thinking about it and you're making decisions in life, tell me if I'm not speaking, if I'm done speaking on your behalf incorrectly, like once I stop. So in such a situation, then there's no tshuva. Then it's not called doing tshuva. But if I can do everything but the technical aspect of the exact wording, so that I can rely on a shliach tzibur to do on my behalf. In fact, it's not just my behalf. That's what the Kohen Gadol did with the carbon on Yom Kippur, and it affects the kapara. It makes it happen. It effects it. EFFECT. Yes? Did I say it well? Do you disagree? Okay. So if that's the case, all is fine. So in other words, says Dina, that's all assuming that the person really wants to do something, or maybe just doesn't know the technicalities, right? And so therefore, in such a situation, Dina says, you could be my shliach, but you're not really my shliach, you're my shliach for the technical part, but I'm joining with you, otherwise it doesn't work. Right? Yes? So far, so good? So now comes the million-dollar question. I told you, it's not as simple as it looks. Right? When do we say vidui? There are the times you say vidui. So we say, when we say slichas, we say vidui. In Kippur, we say vidui. Any other time? So now, when do you say vidui before a person dies? So hopefully you say it when a person is still around enough. Of course, already in the Shulchan Aruch time, we see that there was like a concern, be careful how you introduce the topic, because you don't want to scare somebody into being too scared, and this. So there's a whole discussion among the different commentaries and among the modern books how to make sure that you can introduce the idea of saying vidui without getting into too much trouble, right? Let's say you mess up, and now the person slips into a coma. Can you say vidui on their behalf? Trick question, right? Now all of a sudden, that's not so simple, right? Can I say vidui on the other person's behalf? What do you say now?
Wait.
Stick to your guns, lady. Right? Mrs. Ambeder, stick to your guns.
You didn't designate the person before, and even
Gomer Dina says I have to be a part of the process. But here the person's out to lunch.
You're in power of attorney.
Go ahead. Now what do you say? You switch you change your mind?
Me now.
Huh? What do you say now? What do you say?
I'm sticking with my guns. I think it's relating to the shliach situation where shliach shalom kamoso. You know, the guy wants, he would want to. It's not like he said no.
Right.
And
so you want to say it's more like zachen l'adam shalom b'fanav, right? It's a zchus for him.
Yeah.
Is it a zchus to say? Can you say it's a zchus to say vidui? It's a zechus when you gain something, not when you lose something.
It's a mitzvah. You're being mechaper ba'ado ba'be, so you can affect that change and make the
Now, what Dina, I hear what you're saying, and we're going to take that over. What your wife would say back to you is, I'm scared to say what I really think, which is, it's useless. Right?
No.
Don't feel so bad. Rabbi Chaim Chalevsky, the famous author of the Aruch HaShulchan, says as follows. This is in the Yerideyasim and Shim Lamed Chesiv Gimel. Listen to the language. He says, Ha'ikar tzorech liros sheyomar havidoi ba'odo bedaito. When a person is saying, towards the end of life, you better make sure that the person gets a chance to say vidui while they are still in their own right minds. Because, diksha'ino bedaito eno klum. If the person is out of his or her mind, the vidui, useless. Vidui hu ikar gadol. And saying vidui is kind of an important thing. Right? At the very least, Aruch HaShulchan says, say at least the most basic form of vidui. You can go all the way up to saying huge viduis, like we say on Yom Kippur. But at the very least, it sounds like that at the very least, you have a responsibility to make sure the person is still conscious. So, of course, is that accurate? Let's say I get into the room, the guy's gone. He's there, but conscious not. And I've had this situation. I get invited to come to the house, last legs, what do you do? Family's waiting. So I happened to be talking last year with Rabbi Howie Jachter, Rabbi Chaim Jachter. Rabbi Jachter is a member of our Beis Din here in Elizabeth. He is a phenomenal Talmud Chacham. Also somebody who has, he's a Rebbe at TABC, he's a Rav in Teaneck, and the Sfard Yeshul in Teaneck. Like he's an incredibly special guy. So I asked him, I said, I'm working on this sugya, and he says, oh, I wrote something on that. And he mentioned, I'm arguing back and forth with him. So listen, he says, there is a commentary on the side of the Shulchan Aruch called the Beis Lachem Yehuda. It's also in Shin Lamed Ches in Yoredei, and he says, obviously it's more ideal for a person to say vidui when they're alert, but he doesn't say the extra point that if the person's not alert, that it's useless. So Rabbi Jachter goes, I think you can be medayik that he doesn't think it's useless. The question is why. So you should just know, I think, which one of you is Queens? Right? So you should just know, who is the dean of all things death in the United States, halachically? So he says, I talked to Rabbi Zon. Rabbi Zon's awesome, by the way. Right? And he says, Rabbi Zon says that he likes to say, he was once dealing with a family, with somebody who had lapsed into a coma, and the family was, discussing death, and Rabbi Zon was trying to encourage them, and they said, he's already dead, there's nothing to worry about. He's gone. So Rabbi Zon went back later when the family wasn't there, and he said vidui with the person, and the patient grabbed his hand and squeezed the arm tight, and Rabbi Zon, and only let go when he got to Tiavnu Tainu Tetanu. Right? So Rabbi Zon says, I'm pretty sure there was a Shomea Kaona situation going on. Joe Shmo comes Yom Kippur to Yeshua, and he doesn't know how to read a word of Hebrew. So he turns to you and he says to you, Moshe, do me a favor, say the Vidui on my behalf, and I'll listen, Shomea Kaona. So it'll be as if I said it. I also want to do tshuva. I also see my situation is grave, right? But still, notwithstanding, right, I'm hoping that something good come out of it. This guy, why is he any different? Right? And so therefore Rabbi Jachter wanted to argue that, you know, yeah, you can do it. Not because you could do tshuva on behalf of somebody else, but you can certainly create the situation where the person can achieve kapara, where you can be the mouthpiece for the person, right? Because somehow, some way, some form, somebody's still there. However, I have a friend who is also a former student. His name is Rabbi Jason Wiener. Rabbi Jason Wiener is the chief chaplain at Cedar Sinai in L.A. All the chaplains. He's a very interesting fellow. And he wrote a book last year called The Jewish Guide to Practical Medical Decision Making. So in a footnote, he writes that he asked this very question to Rav Asher Weiss. And Rav Asher Weiss says, don't bother saying a vidui for somebody who's comatose. Say Shema, let the neshama leave in the environment of Kiddush Shem Shemayim, like the way the neshama Yisrael of Yom Kippur leaves, right? Let it go out, but Kedusha Batara. He said that would make more sense. There's also a series of notebooks from Rabbi Tendler, not Rabbi Moshe David Tendler, but Rabbi Mordechai Tendler, three volumes called Masoras Moshe. There is notebooks. He's been writing up his notebooks. It's in the second volume on page 278. He said he was also with Rabbi Moshe once, and Rabbi Moshe said also he thought that it made no sense to say Vidu for a person in a coma, because why? You cannot do tshuva for somebody else. Exact words of Rav Moshe. That's our question. Now, Rabbi Tendler writes in the Sefer, I think it's in the footnote, he says he does understand that it's already become a kubel to say it. He doesn't understand, you know, why, but it's become the custom, and Rav Moshe understood that. So the bottom line, as far as this question, can you do tshuva for someone else? The answer is tshuva? Definitely not. Right? Definitely not. But can you be a mouthpiece because of the principle of Shomer Kaona? The answer is, well, it depends. And what does it depend on? How consciously aware is the other person? If the person is in agreement and in awareness of the tshuva process, you can go ahead. Even if there's a chance that they'll join in, you can lead them because you're let them follow through, right? But if you're pretty sure that the person has checked out, no, you can't do tshuva. For somebody who is not here anymore. This is one of the big things that we discuss sometimes when we talk about Yom Kippur. Sometimes we say we're being mechaper for the mason. We can't be mechaper for the mason. The time is up. What we can do is bring them and have them be mitzarif with Klal Yisrael. For those things, we can turn around and create a situation. But to do tshuva? And again, one of the cool parts of this particular question is the understanding that why, that within this question is a built-in piece. And what's that? That there's a difference between tshuva and kapara. So that's the first question. Should we do one more? Let's do one more.
The question on the point that the dead person or the person who's going to die can't bring himself to tshuva. So when someone did an avera and has to go to a dead person with 10 people and ask for mechila, if he can't even save himself, how can he save you?
This is a very difficult. I've been thinking about this a lot lately. I don't remember how I got into the topic, but I wound up going in through a whole bunch of different perspectives to try to figure out why it works. Right? If the person's not here, what is going to the grave supposed to do? I still don't know. Right? I don't get it. But Chazal tells us that you can go, possibly because once the other person has left, then the Bein Adam L'Chaver no longer exists. And what does exist? The Bein Adam L'Makom, right? So at least that part I can be mechaper for. And I can hope that the other person was willing to forgive. What do we say at night? Like, I don't want anyone to be hurt because of me. Say that in Tefillah Zakah. I beg people all the time. Like, you know, this is Machalmi week, right? Then just, you do say that Yirato before Kriyashma, right? Please.
Well, other eight says someone davens nisuch svarit. So if they daven the day that they, chances are the day that they're laying in bed before they hit the coma.
Right.
They said, you know, shamu
gavim. Yeah.
Nisuch svarit pays off.
Right. So as I said, I tell people all the time. It always helps sometimes. In not only nisuch svarit in Eretz Yisrael, everybody says it. It's a standard practice. And maybe sometimes we do things a little bit backwards here because we're in such a rush, right? Maybe we should make it our habit a little bit more often to be misvada. Yeah, okay. We have to be careful though; it shouldn't become a vidui peh. That's also one of the sins. Vidui peh. Yeah. Let's talk about the machzor one. Okay, we'll do the machzor one, and we'll save the other one for another point in time. Okay, so this person, the lady, borrows a machzor from the shul, and she cries into the machzor. Right now, she tries to give it back to the shul, and the guy who's in charge of the machzor, like, I don't want a tear stained machzor. I want the one that, you know, that, go out and buy some machzor, and you can keep this one. What do you say? Does she pay or does she not pay? So hopefully, it's only you and not the machzor.
She made the machzor moldy. She must be super special.
Right? Okay. But what does that do practically? Excellent question. But what does that do for her practically? Oh. Now start talking. She's mazik. Okay, so we know the Gemara tells us in, you know, the children learn, your son's probably learning this now, right, that there are four types of shomer. No, you looked at it last year, right, that there's, the shomer chinam, and the shomer sachar, and the socher, and the shoel. What's a shoel? A shoel is somebody who borrows. He carries all the liability, because when you take on no responsibility, you have to pay for all the liability. And so therefore, even a shoel is chayev, even on an unavoidable accident, and what we call an ones. What is the one time that a shoel is exempt? Mesa, machas melacha. If in course of use, the item dies, right? I hire a donkey, and while the donkey's carrying the load, it drops dead. So then the shoel has a right to turn around and say, Mesa machmas melacha. Why? Why is the shoel exempt from Mesa machmas melacha? So there's a difference of opinion among the Rishonim. The Rama, not to be confused with Ramosha Isilis, Reish Mem Hei, not Reish Mem Aleph. So he says that one is exempt in this circumstance. Why? If the animal dies not because of the work, but at the time it was working, right? So I brought it out, it was working, now it's lunchtime, right? And then it just drops dead, right? It's out doing the work, but it wasn't pulling the load. It wasn't because of the load that the animal dropped dead. It had an unrelated heart attack, right? Answer? So the Rama says, I understand. You're exempt because that's at the time you're doing the work, right? And the Rush says, what are you talking about? The words are Mesa Machmas Malacha. If it was pulling the load and then it dropped dead because of the load, then you'd be exempt, but otherwise you're not. Now, we have another principle called Malacham Avas Malihacha Malihasam. What does that mean? God knocks and then knocks out wherever you are. It doesn't make a difference. So, Why, when we have a Mesa Machmas Malacha situation, why don't we just tell the guy, tough nugs, don't borrow, rent, right? Like, if it's Malihacha Malihasam. So the Ramban says that it has nothing to do with the Shoel. Do you know why Mesa Machmas Malacha and the Shoel is Pater? When I lend you something, right, if your animal can't handle the job, then it's Pshia on my part to have given it to you. And so I took that, it's negligence on my part, having lent it to you. And so therefore I understand whatever happens is going to happen, and the animal's going to drop dead. The Yad Rama will say, no. He'll say that once I loaned something for the job, right, it's understood that it could die on the job, irrespective of, you know, what you use it for. And so therefore, I understand I'm running the risk of death on the job. And this is and that's how the Rama would explain it, and so suggests the Machne Ephraim and say Shelo Pikadon 4, and the Nemuke Yosef 2, Bamitzia Dafnun Hayamid Beis, that's how they would look. So again, we have the Ramban and the Rush on the one side. They say that what? It's only Machmas Malacha. And then we have the other side, which is the situation of the Rama, who says no, that even if it's at the time, That's the way things go. How do we paskin la'alacha? So the Shulchan Aruch and Chosha Mishpat, Simen, Shin, Mem, Sif, Gemo argues that if the onus happened on the job, it's meisa machmas malacha. In other words, the Shulchan Aruch paskins with the more lenient opinion, right? And the Ramah comes along, this time being the Ashkenazic Ramah, right, comes along and he says, what are you talking about? It's not called machmas malacha unless it's machmas malacha. And the Shach says the Ramah also, the Shach says that the Ramah is also correct. So we have the Ramah and the Shulchan, the Ramah with the hay, and the Shulchan Aruch saying that, you know, you lend it, you give up your right to collect for anything that happens at the time of work. And you have the Ramban, Shach, and Ramah who say that no, it's only machmas malacha, it's only within the work. So now let's go back to our master case. Now that we have the bare bones outside, is it mesa machmas malacha? Well, I lend the woman the master, the shul lends the woman the master, right? Was she using it properly? Well, that depends. How do you look at it? What's a proper use of a machzer? So it depends. So I use the woman as an example. There's a difference between... Right, so is it a situation... So is that called Eina Metsuya or is it called Metsuya? Right? How is a person supposed to hold the machzer? Use it like this. How did she probably hold the machzer if she got it so tear-stained? Right? So, for those of you who are listening at home, you can imagine she could have either held the machzer out and down, and when the tears flowed, she could have held her hands in such a distance that the tears would not have gotten machmas malacha onto the machzer. And if she chose to put her face up in front of it, so that is, maybe she doesn't have a right to argue mesa machmas malacha, in which case she should be liable, at least according to the Ramah, to the Shach, and to the Ramban. She didn't take care of that, and so therefore she should have to replace it. Yeah, but here's the difference. You know what the difference is? This is not a situation of a donkey moving around in the mountains. This is a person who is crying on Yom Kippur, right? Everyone knows that you cry on Yom Kippur. Some will tell you it's a mitzvah to cry. I remember a couple of years I was in the yeshiva for davening. So they always sat me two rows behind this one guy who lives in Eretz Yisrael today. He's a very nice person. But I think he took it literally. So you'd hear him all Yom Kippur. I don't even think he was really crying. It was just too fake, right? But he felt that you had to cry. Maybe he kept some tacks in his shoe or something like that. Because he sounded like he was a dying cow in the middle of Shemoneh Esrei. It's like, dude, let us daven, you know? But, you know, and not to knock the guy, whatever. So why can't I argue in this case? Like, you know what? This is not Mesa Machmas Malach. This is like, no offense, but this is what was expected. So I can't argue that. You know why? There is another parallel. We're going back to Avelis twice in the same shir, right? We have a concept where the Shulchan Aruch in Hilei Yoredei, Simen Shin Mem, Sif Lamed Dalet, deals with the following case. Guy's going to visit his father, right? And he's going to visit his father. He says, can I borrow your coat? I'm going to visit my sick father. And he goes out to go visit his sick father. By the time he gets there, his father's not sick anymore. His father dies. So he goes into the room. His father's dead. What does he have an obligation to do? He has to tear kriya, right? He's there. B'shas yitzias neshama. However, he's not wearing his own coat. He's wearing someone else's. What does he do? So if he used the phrase, I'm going to visit my sick father, he should tear the garment and then replace it. So suggests the Shulchan Aruch. But if he didn't say, I'm going to visit my sick father, but rather he only said, can I borrow your coat? You're not allowed to tear kriya in that moment because it's not yours. So there's a difference, but fundamentally, even if you're in a situation where you say you're going because you're going to visit your sick father, and the other person knows why you're going, right? He knows you're going, and he knows that there's a chance that what's going to happen, that the person is going to lose his father, and therefore he may wind up losing his coat. What do we say has to happen anyway? Is he putter? No, he has to replace. You may be able to do the kriya, but you still have to pay for it. Ergo, what do you say? That's simply saying that this is what everyone expects, that you're going to cry on Yom Kippur. Well, everyone expects when you go see somebody who's that deathly ill, that the person may die. And still notwithstanding, you have to pay in that situation. So that would seem to suggest that what? Nebuch, the poor lady, has to go buy the new machzer. Ah. So Rav Zilberstein, in Vavei Amudim of Tavshin Ayin Hei, in the Cheshvan edition, he says, stop. Look at what you're talking about. You're talking about a tear-stained machzer, like, please, come on. He says the damage of tears is less than a shava pruta, and therefore he thought that it was ridiculous to make the woman replace the maaser. He went one step further. He said that actually a tear-stained maaser is like a good thing. It's a step up. He cited the example, they say, you know, the Chafetz Chaim was so proud when he finally got a hold of his mother's tillim, because his mother's tillim was tear-soaked. Letters had been ruined because he says, ah, das is a tillim. That's the way tillim's supposed to look. You know why I was able to become whatever I was able to become? Because my mother sat in the corner and she cried over the tillim that she should have a child who'd be shomer Torah mitzvahs. So, you know, so Rishdin says, like, if anything, you might want to argue that it's an enhancement. They say, Rav Huttner used to say, that a person who comes to Yom Nerayim without any wine spills on his kittel, right, from when's the other time you wear the kittel, the Pesach Seder, he's just like, I don't understand, how could you come to Yom Nerayim without a grape juice stain or wine stain on your kittel? Like, where would that come from, right? So therefore, Zilberstein said, if anything, maybe the shul should pay her, right? He doesn't go that far. But he does say that, you know, it's certainly not a holdback. So he says that in the particular case that he was dealing with, he saw that the other side was a little upset, you know, that he paskin for the woman, right? So he turns around after he offers the psak, he reaches into his pocket, and he pulls out some money, and he says, tell you what, I will buy this maaser right here, right now, right? And you can go buy another one with this money. I want to have this type of a maaser with me, right? That's how serious he felt. So again, as far as this shaila is concerned, we'll close out on this point, right? That, you know, technically speaking, a person borrows something from a shul, right? Unless you're a full member, then you may not be a borrower. You may be a part owner. It's a different discussion for another time. But if let's assume she was a guest in this case, right? And she borrows the siddur, she borrows the maaser, right? So technically speaking, she's a shoal, and a shoal should theoretically be chayev. But let's look at the damage. If it's not a shava pruta, there's nothing to say she's chayev for. And sometimes what you think is a damage is not a damage; it's actually an enhancement. And so therefore, a person has to understand and take those things in mind. We're holding in a period in time where every tefillah is a good tefillah, and as we were saying tonight, you know, being mincha l'mayariv, one of the highlights of the davening is to take a regular tefillah and turn it into a zaka, to call out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Whatever we can do to enhance that and to create that certain environment is sort of important. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is certainly speaking to us and sending us messages during this time of the year. He sends us messages all the times during the year, but sometimes our reception is a little bit more tuned in during this time of the year. So maybe we should take advantage of that, and hopefully if we do, we will not only for ourselves and our loved ones, but all of Klal Yisrael will be zocheh to exceed v'chasima tovos. Thank you very much. Okay, we'll stop here.